SPACs are opening the door for more EV companies to enter public markets. One of those companies is Arrival. It's combining with CIIG MergerCorp in a deal valuing the London-based electric bus and van company at $5.4 billion. I'm joined now by Arrival president Avinash Rugabar. Avinash, great to have you here.
Great to be here. Thanks, Hope.
A lot of people are really excited about the timeline. How much longer are these investors going to have to wait?
So we've actually announced that our bus will actually be in production at the end of this year, followed by our van in Q3 of 2022. So we are rapidly moving towards the production of these vehicles. We have prototypes built. They're going into trials and testing with our key customers. So I think that's something very unique. I think with Arrival, we've been around for a while, and now we're really coming out to show the technology to the world.
If it were not for SPACs being more accepted, what would you say would have been sort of your option for Arrival to go public? Would you have gone the traditional route, direct IPO?
Yeah, when we were looking at our next steps, we obviously investigated all of those anyway. Whether it's direct listing, your traditional IPO, continuing private was also something we were looking at. Obviously, we had investment from UPS, Hyundai, Kia, and BlackRock before we made the decision. But really, I think what sort of made us go down this path was when we met with CIIG. So the SPAC that we're merging with Peter Cunio as the the ex-CEO of Marvel. Lot of experience in running public companies, and the great team that he's built. It just seemed like the right direction to go down, because we had the access to the capital, we had a partner that really understood building brands, and for us, it was, let us scale the microfactories. The technology is ready, so for us, it's about scaling.
And you have been in stealth mode too, so I wonder how that impacted. Was that a deliberate decision that you wanted to be in stealth until you were ready to go public?
Absolutely. So, one of the things I think that differentiates Arrival from many others in this segment is, as you mentioned, we've been in actually stealth since 2015. So we've been around for 6 years. We've got over 1,400 employees, heavily engineering centric. 90% are engineers, 50% of those are software engineers. We were self-funded up until we received the investment from Hyundai and Kia and UPS. And what that allowed us to do is build a really deep level of technology. So you can't design vehicles and build them the way we are unless you've had complete focus on building the technology. So we've got a very large patent portfolio. We've vertically integrated our own components, our own composite materials, and all of that comes together in this microfactory. So we spent a lot of that time in stealth getting all of that ready, and then accelerated even further with the partnerships we made. And then when, again, back to looking at where we were going to go over the next few years, that's 5 years of deep technology building, quiet. So typically when a startup gets an investment, they're going to get forced down a particular path. For example, our composite material, it's amazing tech. You run the danger of trying to commercialize that. Whereas we knew that if we were going to change how this whole industry operated, we needed 4 or 5 levels of really deep technology that we had to build. And that stealth and self-funding just let us really concentrate on that. And now we're ready to really bring it to the world.
And through this, you're expected to raise about $660 million. Of all of those technology layers, which layers will receive the bulk of that? How are you allocating it?
Yeah, I think the R&D is pretty holistic. So we build all of our technologies as a system. I like to think of Arrival, not that we create electric vehicles, but we create the systems that create these best-in-product electric vehicles. And we do that so that we can create these vehicles or produce these vehicles at similar price to diesel, and you have a lower TCO. So, if you've got a best-in-class product, so for example, our van is a 2-ton vehicle with a 2-ton payload, better cargo volume than its competitors, but it's at a similar price to a diesel vehicle, and it's got a lower TCO. So if you're the operator going to buy it, it's no-brainer to really go for a vehicle like this compared to a typical diesel, but most electric vehicles have that price premium. But getting back to how we use the proceeds, so you know, we have the engineering, it's all done together as a system. And then a bulk of the proceeds are going to be used to scaling. So we've got the microfactory. We've announced two, one in the UK and one in Rock Hill in the US. And we're going to be continuing to roll out microfactories as, you know, the production runs continue over the next few years. So a bulk of the proceeds is going to be used on scaling.
I want to get into the microfactories a little bit later, but for those who, you know, are not as familiar with the main products, you've got the Arrival bus and then you have last mile delivery. You mentioned UPS. They've been sort of a partner of yours from the beginning. Talk to us about how you'll be developing different types of vehicles. I mean, they're different in size, they're different in utility, off of what the industry is now calling, you know, your skateboard.
Yes. I mean, skateboard, I think everyone nowadays that's got an EV talks about, you know, they have a skateboard platform. I think for us, it's technology layers. So first of all, we design our own components. So this is the what we consider, you know, smart components. So the battery, the BMS, inverters, human machine interface. These are components that we design in-house, and they're designed to be plug and play. So they're upgradable in hardware and software, but they can actually be reused across different vehicle types. So for example, the bus uses the same battery modules that the van does, that the small vehicle platform does. Same with the box that does the human machine interface. Obviously, the digital experience that we may enable off that will change between the bus and the van and the small vehicle platform, but they're essentially the same components that we use across all of them. Then the skateboard for us becomes housing for crash and structure to hold the components in. And that changes according to the vehicle weight. So you have a platform for heavier vehicle weights like the bus, and then obviously you mentioned the van and a small vehicle that we're doing in 2023 or launching in 2023. Then the composite materials, what that does is allows us to rapidly create different form factors. So from the product design point, early on, we're able to go from CAD to part much more rapidly than traditional processes using this composite. So we can create multiple different shapes and types and form factors of vehicles. But even in production, we're using that same composite material across all the vehicle platforms. And because, and just for clarity, that forms kind of like the top hat, what goes on top of the skateboard. And because we're not using metal stamping or paint shops, and we have our own unique process to produce those panels, we can just do that at lower capex and more rapidly. So it, when you add all of these things together, we are actually able to do multiple vehicle platforms at the same time, because they actually all reuse the technologies, but you know, specifically for that vehicle application. But the underlying technology layers are all the same, which is why, you know, I think of it as systems that create vehicles.
When I was watching you talk about this with another media outlet, it to me triggered this idea of a recipe. You've got the same sorts of ingredients, and you know, if it's a pie, you need a thicker crust in certain ways. If you're, you know, doing cookies, it's you know, even a smaller quantity. So I don't know if that's the right way of thinking about it. I always like to think about things in terms of food. I want to also talk about just this micro factories concept that you guys have seemed to pioneer in this way. I mean, you talked a little bit about how the production itself is so different. So the fact that you have these micro factories, does that also enable you to build more locally and to ramp up more quickly in terms of scale?
Yeah. So I think to answer this, we probably need to just step back in time as to why even go create a micro factory. And I think if you look at the traditional industry, it's basically using a proven technology in terms of the assembly line, but it was something that was invented 100 years ago. And now it's formed a legacy, almost like an anchor in how the industry operates, because there's an assumption as soon as you start to create an electric vehicle, you produce it in that way. But the reality is that production process, while it's being continuously improved and it's obviously stable, it doesn't really reflect modern technology. You know, it is a fixed line that runs at a fixed speed. If there's any issues, you know, the line stops. If you want to change vehicle types, you have to put, you know, hundreds of millions to billions of dollars in investment to do a new vehicle product. It's automated, but it's not necessarily using the most cutting edge ability for, you know, Industry 4.0 or 5.0 or wherever we want to go. But in terms of the flexibility of that line, it's very limited. And the industry has to produce hundreds of thousands of vehicles to be profitable, and it's low margin. And so, you know, typically a startup will go and raise capital to buy one of these factories or partner with somebody who's using that method of manufacturing. And the OEM has that cost on their balance sheet already, and they're trying to amortize that across the different vehicles that they do. So that legacy just forces vehicles to be a certain way. And we just looked at it differently. So with that time that we had, I was talking about in stealth, we were able to come up with this microfactory. And instead of this fixed line, if you were to take the lid off a microfactory, you'd see technology cells that each perform, each cell performs operations. And we use autonomous ground vehicles to move parts to each cell. The cell performs an operation, but you can reroute the production process very easily. You just take it from one cell to another cell. And so you're able to produce different vehicle types from that same microfactory. Now, the important things about the microfactory, you know, they're 50 million, around 50 million in capex. They're about 20,000 square meters or 200,000 odd square foot. They can be deployed in existing warehouses. Why that's important is those warehouses are found everywhere around the world. And we're using off-the-shelf robots. You know, we control the software layer and a bunch of other technology within the microfactory, but the actual robots themselves are off-the-shelf. And that means that we can produce at lower volumes and still be profitable, but we can scale these microfactories in parallel. So instead of spending hundreds of millions to billions of dollars and waiting 2-3 years to commission your factory, we take existing warehouses, we bring our equipment in, we turn them into production facilities, and we can do that in parallel at multiple locations around the world.
And that's important because globally, electrification, decarbonization of transportation is a huge priority around the world. Just really quickly, and we only have you for a limited time, which areas of the world are the most aggressive and would be maybe your biggest customers right now?
So initially we're starting with the US and Europe. Obviously with the new administration, they're making a lot of strides forward in that space. Europe, UK are similar in that, but this is a world problem, and you said it very well. This is literally something that, you know, from the streets of Johannesburg to Mumbai to, you know, Tokyo, clean air is something that every government wants and every citizen wants. And so when we look at the rollout of the microfactories, we believe that they're going to be in every major city around the world, is like what we like to say. So the thing about that is, you can start to do some pretty interesting things with the microfactory when you see their payback period, right? The payback period is significantly shorter than what the payback period would typically be. So you can start to really have a very interesting and local product mix. And that's important because, you know, we've tended to take this one size fits all across transportation. Hey, we'll build a really large factory, we'll build, you know, one vehicle type, and we just assume that that should be able to go everywhere. But if you just look at the way people live, the needs of citizens in New York is different to LA, right? Just within America, it's totally different in Texas. It's completely different. But typically we try to create the same transportation products across all of those. And so we think that there's a very unique opportunity here with, you know, the systems that we've created, the production that can be at any volume. These microfactories hire local people, you know, they're part of your community, but they can actually build product for your local transportation ecosystem. And I think the beautiful thing about this approach is that can change over time. The need to do these really high volumes to ensure profitability because of the low margins, when you remove that, you can start to, you know, create some real magic for the communities, I believe.
And I don't want to overstep here, but I mean, you know, with your background, I feel like, you know, you understand that a lot, you know, being based in London, you know, your family and now building in America, you've seen these local marketplaces in need. I think that's really smart. Really quickly here, competition. I mean, Rivian is coming up. You've got, you know, Canoo. How do you see yourself competing with a rival against those companies?
Yeah, I think first off, if you look at the market, the interest in this space, and you mentioned it up front in terms of the interest in SPACs, et cetera, I think it's more interest in the EV segment. And I think the interesting thing there is, I believe there's already been a mind shift in the investment community and the public that this is the future. There's nothing going to stop the electrification of vehicles. And then further, I would say zero emission and green technologies from that point. When I look at the competition, as an entrepreneur, I think anyone that takes on this challenge, first of all, deserves respect, whichever approach that you're going to go after. I think particularly for the arrival story, you know, when we talk about the depth of engineering and the talent we have, everything starts from there. I think team first, right? Team and culture. And so we've got significant engineering horsepower. It's partnered with teams from different industries. I've been in the automotive industry, but also in and out of it. Other folks have come from very different backgrounds, and we, you know, combine that. And, you know, for example, the composites innovations from multiple different industries applied to automotive. So I think with the engineering horsepower we have, the fact that we're vertically integrated, we're taking on all of that, which lets us really do something different. And then the microfactories, you know, I think we've got some very unique tools in our toolkit that really separates us from many other players. And predominantly, it started by really questioning, why does the world work the way it does right now? We know this is a broken system. What about if we started from scratch using the latest tech? But to do that, you have to do the whole thing. And then I think the vehicle itself, I mean, the when you combine the comparative price to diesel with a lower TCO that you get anyway, the composites that further reduces the maintenance and servicing cost, the production process that enables it to be produced at lower cost, but also pay back the capex so you can scale faster. I think Arrival is very unique, and I've been in the industry a long time, and I haven't seen anything like it.
Vertical integration also really important. And just really quickly, any comment on Tesla investing in Bitcoin, accepting Bitcoin?
Yeah, I saw that today. That was pretty cool, pretty smart. I think Elon just understands that this is an ecosystem. You have to be looking at this thing as a whole, because you got to be at the forefront of different technologies. And the question is, why not? We've seen the cryptocurrencies take off. It's worth, I think, taking a position on whether or not you think that will be a method of financing in the future. So that was pretty interesting.
Avinash, thank you so much for your time today. Avinash Rugabar is the president of Arrival. Thanks again.
Thanks.